Making Good. I'm Renee Blanchard, founder and operator of Church Alley Cafe and Grocery, located here in New Orleans, Louisiana. Church Alley is a people-first, mission-driven small business that I opened in 2013. And the best part about owning a cafe is the people. So in this podcast, I interview the makers, the farmers, and the many interesting people I've met through the shops, the folks doing the good work here in Louisiana and all along the Gulf Coast. Let's get started.
So my name is Joaquin Rodas, and I'm the managing partner and founding chef of Bacchanal 51 and Spirits. I'm also the managing I'm just a partner of the Elysian Bar at the Hotel Peter and Paul. And that's it. Yeah. There's no ends.
And yeah, it's a lot.
Bacchanal and the Elysian Bar.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So we know each other just from Church Alley, I think, is how we kind of met from mutual, like as I was getting it going, I think.
Yeah, we met at, I forget, the guys that owned the building where you first went into.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
You were doing
their house
pop-up, which I've never heard of in my life. Somebody was like, Amber was like, stories from Renee's doing a coffee pop. I was like, what does that mean? So let's go check it out.
Have coffee in someone's living room, basically. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So, now we're about to celebrate 11 years open.
Incredible.
In January. Yeah.
Big supporter.
Thanks. I know. I was thinking about yesterday how you've been in every newspaper article that we've had. Yeah. You've been in the covers, the shot, the main photo of every media hit we've had.
The Five Waldo. I'm in there somewhere.
I know. So it was really funny. I think I have them of yours because you've been sitting, because my shops have always had counters. Mm-hmm. So except for this. Well, this one, we don't have seats at the counter. But
right.
Yeah. So how, I know a little bit about this, but how did you start cooking for a living? Because you were the executive chef too, right?
Yeah, well, I started cooking for a living by accident, completely against my wishes. Mm-hmm. The first venture I ever did on my own, I worked at Taqueria Corona for 9 years, from starting as a dishwasher and leaving there as a manager. Mm-hmm. And I got the entrepreneurial bug early and I wanted to do tapas. I just wanted to do drinks with food.
Yeah.
And Mimi Dykes, who had just opened Mimi's in the Marigny at the time, had an upstairs that was vacant. And even though it wasn't my ideal kind of scenario, you got to take the deal that's in front of you.
Yeah.
I think it's cost $30,000. It was the most ridiculous. That's why I love New Orleans, because you could literally open a place that actually is of consequence.
I know.
For $30,000.
I know.
It's insane. So
on a whim.
Yeah. I'm sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Friend. Yeah. Let's go. Yeah. It was literally all the money I'd ever saved, borrowed, or sold.
Yeah.
All invested in that deal. And at the time I was working with a guy and he was my chef. He was actually my chef. He knew about Spanish food and tapas and everything. Mm-hmm. I was like, I'm going to educate myself on Spanish wines and sherries and everything like that. Because I had nothing but the utmost respect for everybody that cooked. I'd never cooked in my life. And I was not looking to go and be a cook.
Yeah.
At all whatsoever. And, I forget what the reason was, but one day he just never came back. Oh. He literally was just like, I'm out. Uh-huh. I can't do this. And it ended up being 5 days before we actually ended up opening.
Oh,
so
that's
it was
right.
Really near the time we opened. And we were doing the build out on the upstairs. And after we got done working upstairs, we'd come downstairs to Mimi's the Bar, which is a phenomenal local corner bar, and start making Jameson and drinking beer. And so that day, it was probably around 10:30, and I was still kind of in a period of disbelief and not really knowing what to do. And I hadn't really told anybody that the chef had left and quit. I hadn't told anybody that.
Yeah.
And so I was trying to figure out a way to break it to everybody. And because up until then we had tastings and we did a really great job of kind of like introducing the bar into the food program.
You had staff?
No, it was just he and I.
Okay, yeah.
And I hadn't hired anyone else. But it was going to be me and him.
Yeah.
And that was it. I was going to be in the front. He was going to be in the back. And then I'd hire bartenders as we needed and cooks as we needed. But at first, we were like,
yeah.
Boom. And then that night in particular, like 10:30 at night, this young couple comes like jump bounding in, like super excited. And we had been running ads in the Gannett for like
weeks. Oh, really? Yeah.
And we were like not even, they weren't like really subdued ads either. It was like Bacchanal, I mean, New Orleans' first tapas bar.
Right, yeah.
Coming soon. Right. So it was like, you know, the guys at Della Chase were kind of like,
Yeah.
We have something to say about that. You know what I mean? Like, Vega Tapas Cafe. We're like, we have something to say about that.
Yeah.
But we're like, no, this is going to be a bar with tapas.
You know,
these are restaurants. Anyway, so they come by bounding in and they're like, hey, is your tapas thing open upstairs yet? And the bartender at the time was like, no, not open yet. And they're like, oh, when's it going to open? And he looked at me and was like, ask that guy. Mm. He's the one doing it. And I was like, no. And so they come over to me and I'm like, oh, sorry. You know, we're not open. We don't know. We'll be open. We'll wait for some permits, which we were.
Yeah.
And then I guess I'd had enough whiskey that I was like, and we had done some catering gigs and so we had some ingredients left over in the kitchen upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, you know what? You guys hungry? And they're like, yeah, we're starving. You know, we don't know where else to go get food because it's like, and that's the reason why I did it. Because after 10 o'clock,
there is nothing around.
Nowhere to get food.
Yeah.
It wasn't like fried jalapeno poppers.
Yeah.
Or raw chicken wings.
Raw chicken.
Anyway, so I went upstairs and I just sliced some cheese and sliced some serrano ham and sliced some chorizo and put some caper berries, toasted some bread and rubbed it with raw garlic. Drizzled everything with olive oil.
Yeah.
Just brought it down to them. And they were just like, oh my God, you're amazing. You're incredible. You're a genius.
Yeah.
And I remember being like, that wasn't that hard.
Right. You're like, maybe I could do this.
I was thinking this. I was like, that's it? I can do that. You know, I can do that a lot.
Yeah.
And so that kind of gave me a little bit of the courage to just open up with, like, instead of having cheeses and meats on a plate.
Yeah.
I did a cheese plate and meat plate. And
yeah.
I had two items on that.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And I figured out how to fry potatoes and make like a sauce.
Oh my God.
So that's how I got into cooking.
Yeah.
I did not get into cooking as a, I don't have one of those cool, like, you know, I used to, you know, sit under my grandma's table and watch her roll meatballs or, you know what I mean? Like, I'd help her shuck peas or whatever. No, I don't have any of those stories at all. Definitely had aunts and a mom that was a really phenomenal, is a really phenomenal cook, and I've always enjoyed eating.
Yeah.
But I never once thought it to be my vocation or my job.
Yeah, it just came
until
together.
I had to. And,
and
having to have a girlfriend at the time that was very, very supportive of it was like, you seem to really like it. You should do it more.
Yeah.
And she's my wife now. So,
And she's a great cook.
Yeah.
And she's really good.
Yeah. And so, that's how I started.
And this was before Katrina.
This was in 2003-04.
Okay. Yeah. 2004.
Yeah. A year before Katrina.
So. Yeah. And then how long after that experience did you then open? Did y'all open?
5 days after.
5 days after that experience?
Yeah. I opened. We happened to get our occupational license 5 days later.
Yeah.
And I jumped in the kitchen and I did, like, you asked me, did you have staff? I'm like, no, didn't. I was completely green to owning a business. And I literally grabbed my friend who I knew was a bartender and had been drinking at the bar at Mimi's on her day off for like 4 hours.
She
was completely blitzed. And I was like, hey, do you want a bartending job? And she said, yeah. And she came upstairs and bartended that first night.
Yeah.
And I cooked.
Oh my God.
That was the opening of the Upstairs at Mimi's and Mary. Yeah.
It's just so interesting. Like, sometimes I mean, I've only ever opened a business in New Orleans, so I don't have a lot of experience of what another town would be. Mm-hmm. But I feel like that is how you open a business here.
Yeah.
I mean, it just kind of comes together. But I think, like, I don't know, like, it makes me think sometimes the things that we're meant to do or, like, the bigger picture stuff just shows up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if you didn't love, I mean, you're amazing chef. Like, you're a really great cook. Thank you. And I love talking to you about food and flavors. Yeah. And like, sometimes people can cook really well, but not necessarily have those conversations, the in-depth conversations about flavors or textures or different things. And you have all of that. It kind of like, that was just what was going to happen.
Yeah. Thank you. That's a really great compliment. I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that I can always think I've always got this like wannabe compliment. Like I'm always like, I'm still trying to be like convince everybody that I'm
some right.
Like, at least a couple of my so chef you friends. You know, and also I think I can take myself out of that world and remember what it was like to not be a chef and just be an appreciator of the food and why you appreciate the food. Because I think sometimes when you're so deep in the, what they call get lost in the sauce, you know, you're so deep, you nerd out on some things and you forget this is not just for you and your look what I can do.
Yeah.
It's also for people that don't know anything about it.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, it just needs to taste good.
Yeah.
And feel good.
And, yeah. You know, and be in a comfortable space.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I've been able to do that, I think, pretty well. And it's serving well, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I would agree. So another, can you tell the story after the storm?
Yeah.
You went to culinary school.
Yeah, because like every day I worked at Mimi's, I was like, and I had some of my chef friends and, you know, I won't name any names, but would like literally be like, what in the hell are you doing in that kitchen?
Oh,
like no business being in that kitchen. You're gonna cut your hand off.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You know, like don't cut the cheese like that.
And yeah.
They taught. I actually learned some really valuable skills that way. But that when Katrina happened, that was just kind of like this. Like every day I was at work, I was sure somebody's gonna find me out for the fraud that it was. So when Katrina happened, I was like, sweet, I'll go to culinary school. I actually go,
you gotta get out.
And in my head, go learn to cook.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, go actually learn how to cook properly and work with like really great chefs. And I was lucky enough to have have met some really great people at that time that I later became business partners, Heathcliff Haley.
Yeah.
He was my sous chef.
Yeah.
And later my business partner.
Yeah. At Mimi's.
At Mimi's, yeah. And that allowed me to be able to pretty much move to Chicago full time and actually go to Kendall College to go to culinary school.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's pretty neat to, like, then... I feel like when you're talking about how you had your chef friends and people that cooked at coming in and giving your advice, I feel like... that's exactly what happened for me at Church Alley too. Like you have been instrumental in creating my menu in a lot of ways because I just ask you and a number of people, like I just ask y'all questions. I was like, well, how do you do this? How do you do that? How do you do this? And I feel like here, or at least, I mean, I'm not starting brand new right now, but maybe 10 years ago, it was the case where you could kind of start and be like, okay, now what should we do? You know, and there was a lot of freedom, a lot of flexibility. People gave us a lot of flexibility to be able to kind of build, to create as we were going, you know?
I think New Orleans is one of the cool towns like that. I think New Orleans appreciates effort and appreciates love for something. Like if you're really passionate, people will like for a while, then forgive the mistakes, you know?
Yeah.
You know, because I think, I mean, we live in a very imperfect city. There's a lot of things that you have to overlook to really, appreciate the beauty of the city.
Yeah.
And so I think it's the same for a lot of different, and for such an impactful and important restaurant scene, it's not like in Chicago or like I worked in Chicago and it's like, man, you better have all your things buttoned up before you open that door every single day. Because if you don't, they will tear you apart.
Yeah.
And you can sometimes never recover from that.
So
it's like, you know, New Orleans is cool. They don't have any imperfections.
No,
you know?
Yeah.
And when you opened your coffee shop too, though, you got, I mean, you guys are on the edge, the leading edge of a movement that New Orleans had never seen.
Yeah. Like, so, I was talking about that the other day with someone. Like, we were, I think, one of the first shops to open. And we opened in January, and a number of shops opened that year. But we were the first one to do pour overs, just serve single origin coffees. And that was,
you, Lauren.
Yeah.
And Lauren.
Yeah. Solo, Jerry.
Yeah. The three of y'all were the only ones in town doing
it. Yeah. It was interesting.
Yeah.
I think that was an interesting time. That was in 2012. It was still when I think the city was still not in a good spot at all. And so I think there was a lot of room for people to do whatever they wanted. And to bring
2012 was a very interesting kind of like 2012. Yeah, was a inflection point in a lot of what happened in New Orleans that has affected what's going on now.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. It really was. Yeah. So I was going to ask you, did you cook as a kid? So that would be no.
No, not at all. No.
No. So you, where did you grow up in LA?
I was born in El Salvador. When I lived there till I was seven.
Okay.
And then I moved to LA when I was seven.
Okay.
And then grew up there.
Yeah. And so did your family, you said your aunts cooked, did y'all have big family meals and stuff like that too?
Yeah, we had big family parties.
Okay. Yeah.
We always lived in very small apartments.
Yeah. It was just crowded.
It was just my mom and my brother and my dad. Mm-hmm. Just four of us for the most part. For a little while, my aunts came to live with us here and there, but it was like my dad was kind of a, you know, he's a very difficult human being.
Okay.
In particular.
Yeah.
20s and 30s, and they didn't get along. And so they were there for like maybe 2 or 3 months of getting the fight, and then my aunts would leave. But yeah, we always had, I mean, we had a pretty large extended family in LA. And so, like, yeah, birthday parties were like 50, 60, 100 people to show up and grilling and food.
Yeah.
And like the whole shebang.
You know? Yeah. And so you worked, and then when did you move to New Orleans?
When I was 22.
Okay.
When I was 22. I joined the service
and
the military. And then I had an uncle who lived here.
Okay.
He was a partner of Taqueria Corona.
Yes. Okay. That's right. Yeah.
And he's like, basically was like, yeah, you got a job and a place to stay if you come here. And I was like, yep.
Yeah.
I was like, I got that on base, but I'd rather not.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
I want to stay on base. And he had a really nice apartment with a swimming pool.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
In Metairie. So I was like, let's go, you know? So,
yeah.
So I did that.
So you worked there for 9 years.
Yeah, he gave me a part-time job as a dishwasher and a busboy.
Yeah.
But I was still in the military and I was working there primarily.
Oh, I didn't realize you were still in the military when you started working there.
Yep.
Oh,
for 2-3 years.
Mm-hmm.
It overlapped. So.
Even though y'all didn't cook that much, did you have favorite meals growing up?
Yeah.
Did you have like a family?
Yeah, we definitely ate well. Like my mom, I always tell people like my mom's a doctor. Like she's super, super intelligent and a good cook, which is like, she really simple dish. Like if I were to describe them to you, it was like chicken stews and like stewed beef. And she would take like, we didn't have a lot of resources. We were immigrants from Central America.
Yeah.
In LA. And she'd go to, you know, the food bank and get like the dented up cans of like sardines and tomato sauce.
Nice.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and it was like that with rice. You know, like everything with rice.
That is delicious.
It's delicious, yeah.
I was telling someone recently, because I put sardines in tomato sauce sometimes, and it is so good.
It's really good. And so like that's what I mean. Like my mom would actually make it. It doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah.
She would either always put a bay leaf in there or something inexpensive and make it taste super, super, super good. Most of my favorite foods, my favorite dishes have to do with like spending time with aunts or grandmas or mom, and mm-hmm. that emotional attachment. Mm-hmm. I know that that's what it is because I've got those foods for my kids, and they're like, hmm. But it's all right, you know?
Oh, my God.
Like, so, you know, this is the best thing in the world.
And I've ever had.
Yeah. And they're like, eh, it's all right. But a lot of that has to do with just, like, my memories of El Salvador.
Yeah.
And that attachment. You know, it's all Salvadoran recipes.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever I had them in the States, it reminded me of El Salvador.
Yeah.
And what I lost there. And so that's what, those were my favorite.
Yeah.
There was never really anything that I ate growing up that I really had a really good, strong emotional attachment that did not directly correlate with El Salvador.
Oh, interesting. So, yeah.
Including my reason for moving to New Orleans.
Yeah, that's true.
Like,
yeah.
This place reminds me of El Salvador. Also, this place
reminds
me of El Salvador.
Does it?
To me, so much. I mean, the summertime is exactly like it, except for this summer.
Oh, my God.
But every other summer where it just like rains.
Yeah.
And it's super humid and it smells like wet brick
everywhere
and you know, like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's El Salvador.
Hmm.
That's exactly what El Salvador
is. I've never been there before.
Yeah. It's way hillier.
Yeah.
It's not flat like here, but mm-hmm. it's hot and humid. Yeah, Amber always laughs, gets mad at me because I tell her that like some like in El Salvador she grew up the mid-Atlantic, which is four very distinct seasons.
Yeah.
And so, like, one of my aunts or, you know, my cousins would be like, oh, yeah, you know, three old people died in the mountains of El Salvador because the temperature got down to 65.
Oh, my God.
And my wife's like, what? That's impossible. That's ridiculous. They died of something else. I'm like, no, you understand. These people have never felt anything lower than 72 degrees. So that's 7 degrees lower for an extended period of time.
Yeah, without anything.
Like, they're 80, 70 years old.
Yeah.
And they've never felt anything colder than 72.
Yeah.
Well, what about a refrigerator? I'm like, they don't live in a refrigerator. But you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So when you live that way, it's just different.
It's different.
I don't even know where I was going.
I lived in D.C. for a long time. And it was interesting. Because I saw snow for the first time at like 22 years old when I was there, and and every season change, I'm like, oh my God, this is crazy.
Leaves
change colors. This is amazing.
Yeah. I was like, it's funny because I tell Amber a story about the first time I touched snow and how disappointing.
It was disappointing. Why?
It was horrible. I didn't know it was hard.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't know it was cold.
Yeah. Really?
I was like, my hands are
perfect. You couldn't even hold. Yeah.
Right, without a mitt, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember Amber being like, you didn't know snow was cold?
Never. It didn't even like, think about it.
Central America, like, in our things, it's cotton. Like, we're like a fake snow.
Yeah.
But we're still sweating. You know what I mean?
I think about my Christmas traditions. It's to go to the beach and drink margaritas. Like, that's what we did as a family.
Yeah. No, it was just kind of like, she gets mad at me. And I'm like, I didn't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, when you're a Central American kid and you're seven.
Yeah. You know,
like, you didn't notice everybody's bundled up. I'm like, I thought that was just what they were wearing.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know. But yeah, New Orleans is very, very, very much like El Salvador.
Huh.
Like with the big, like instead, imagine the oak trees as opposed to being oaks, they're mangoes.
Oh, interesting.
But they're big like that. They're big.
Really?
Yeah. Big green leaves and stuff like that. Yeah.
Huh.
So that's why when I moved here and I was like, bumpy streets, corrupt politicians. I know.
I know exactly how to live here.
You know, no traffic laws. You know, like get in where you fit in, you know, like, I can thrive here. I'm good.
I went to Beirut a few, like, now it's been like 10 years. I spent a few weeks there with a friend. And I was like, this is New Orleans. This is exactly like New Orleans, but with better roads. And they were like, that cannot be possible. Yeah. Their roads were terrible. It was not great roads. But it was still way better than we have.
New Orleans?
It was so weird. And they let me drive on the highway in Beirut, and it was crazy.
Right.
Yeah, and it was, like, you just drive you get in. There's no lane. I mean, there are lanes, but you don't pay attention. You just kind of go through. And they're like, how did you know how to do that and drive? They thought it wouldn't work out, but.
Amber likes, whenever we're international, like, she trusts me driving.
Because
I learned to drive in El Salvador.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Yeah, it was like, 13 or 14 hours of the drive down there. And it's like,
yeah, everywhere.
You just get in and, you know, like now, I guess in the United States, they're building a lot more roundabouts. I'm very comfortable with roundabouts. Yeah. I'm just like, I'm getting in.
You know? Yeah.
You slow down. It's like, how do you think they're going to slow down? I was like, well, if they don't, we crash.
Yeah.
So, they don't want to crash. Yeah. You know, they're like, I don't care. And they do. So they stop, I go.
That's how I know.
Yeah.
I know you and Amber both cook a lot. What kind of foods do y'all cook at home now?
Mostly Italian food.
Oh, yeah.
Italian flavor, just because it's so fast and easy, and it's like, you know, good olive oil.
Yeah.
Good vegetable.
Yeah.
Pasta.
Yeah.
Of some kind. Yeah. You know, some ricotta cheese. You know, like super easy and quick and healthy, you know, pretty delicious.
Yeah.
Yeah, we cook mostly that. But every once in a while, I'll try to sneak in a Salvadorian dish. And only to have my kids go, man, sorry.
They don't like it.
Yeah. Like, they just want me to make pasta. You know?
Really? Yeah. What food do they like? Like, you said pasta, but like, what kind of dish are they always asking you?
Spaghetti
to cook?
And red sauce.
That's it? Spaghetti and red sauce?
That's very, so I've gotten really good at it.
Yeah. And
there is a way, it's funny, because when we were in Italy recently, there's a way to do it, and there's a way that you could, there's many ways to do it.
Yeah.
But the best way to do it is like very specific.
Yeah.
So I do it like that. And it took a long time to get good at it. You know, the way the Italians do it is like they don't finish cooking the pasta in the pot. They bring it over, finish it in the sauce, and then they toss and toss, and they add pasta water and toss and toss and toss and toss. And that really kind of gets the sauce.
It makes a huge difference. I started doing that a few years ago and using that pasta water for whatever. I put it in so many different things and I always keep it. And I use nutritional yeast a lot of times to put in different with the pasta water. It's really good. It's just so much more savory. But yeah, I definitely move now. I've switched to moving the pasta into whatever it is. And then you sit for another whatever, I don't know, however long.
Yeah, until it's done. Cooking. Doesn't take long.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that and what do they like? You know, Amber makes a roasted chicken, like a whole roasted chicken.
Yeah.
The kids were pretty much vegetarian until about five, I guess, for both of them. And so, but now they eat chicken when it's like.
Good.
Yeah, good chicken, like from the farmer's market and the lady.
Yeah.
This is Elmer.
You know? Yeah, I know.
The chicken had name.
The baby photos.
Yeah. I guess not Elmer, it's Elmira. But she does a very simple butter under the skin, garlic under the skin, roasted chicken. And they love that. Like,
yeah.
They love it. And then, what else do they like? They like very simple black bean and rice burrito.
Oh, nice. It is delicious.
Yeah.
I mean, that is so good.
No cheese.
No cheese.
No.
Just black beans.
Just beans. They're purest. Yeah. No bean. I mean, no cheese.
No cheese.
Yep. Flour tortilla.
No extra seasoning in the beans.
No. Yeah, well, no, yeah. They like the way we mix. So the way I make the beans, they're out of the can, but I always start with neutral oil, like avocado oil, and finely chopped garlic, and really finely chopped onions, because if they find it, it's over. The mystery's over.
Yeah.
But you fry that in the oil, and then you add the beef to that oil.
Oh, okay.
And it just makes it taste better.
Oh, nice.
So everybody's like putting cumin and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
I always just do that. And
it
tastes like, just like Nona, you think.
What are some of your favorite flavor combinations? Like
onion, garlic, garlic and acid.
Yeah.
I would say if there's anything that I do a lot is I'm a fan of acid.
Yeah.
Lemon drizzled on everything.
On everything. What does it do? What do you think it?
I think learning how to cook, but apparently what it's called is called acid balance.
Okay.
It just brings another, it elevates some flavors. It kind of gives it a lightness, like the bright acidity.
Yeah.
Because there is some sugar in that acid still. It's not like vinegar. Vinegar is definitely much more just acid.
Right.
You know, as opposed to lemon still has some sweetness in there.
Yeah.
Or lime. Lemon and lime, I'm really big fans of. Yeah, I think savory, crunchy, acid. And then, like, I don't know, whatever beans and potatoes are. You know what I mean? Like that,
yeah.
That texture of, you know, starchy. Those are my favorite.
Yeah. What's your favorite way to get crunch into like a meal, or to get crispiness into a meal? Thinking about texture.
I mean, depends on what the meal is, I guess. Because I mean, I think in salads, I think like sunflower seeds or seeds are really fun with that, you know? With pasta, my favorite by far, 100% of the time, is breadcrumbs.
Oh, really?
I love breadcrumbs and pasta.
Really?
Oh, my God. Like, it's like, I'm going to eat bread and bread.
And bread.
And pasta.
My bread in my bread.
Yeah. Like, it's crunchy bread. But yeah, that. And then one of the coolest things that we used to do at Bacchino that I actually had a vegan get really mad at me for was smoked almonds.
Oh, interesting.
Smoked and then fried almonds. You smoke them.
Uh-huh.
And then you chop them up real fine and then you kind of fry them up.
Huh.
And it tastes like bacon.
Oh, interesting.
And it tastes like bacon.
Really?
Well, we were also seasoning them with like a little salt, paprika.
Yeah.
You know, I made this oil.
Mm-hmm.
We used to call it a salami oil.
Uh-huh.
And it's basically all the things that are, all the seasonings that are in like an espinocchio, so like fennel seed, oregano, dried oregano. Well, a couple other things, and it was just, remember back in like the early 2000s, everybody was making their seasoned oils.
Yeah.
Like, so it was just that. It was
just
like literally all those things in an oil,
bring it
up to heat, bring it up to temp, they kind of start to dance, and then you just turn the heat off, and then all those flavors are infused in that oil. A little paprika.
Yeah.
And then you just strain it out, and you have this oil. It's super, super flavored. Like everything tasted like pepperoni or like,
Like sausage. Oh my God.
Everything tastes like Italian sausage.
Uh-huh.
After, like, you take a completely vegan pasta and just sprinkle that on it, and it tastes like you're having like sausage pasta.
Huh.
But it's vegan.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds delicious.
It is.
It's very delicious.
Yeah.
We season my olive oil, but we just let it sit. We don't cook it. We just let it sit for a long time.
Yeah. There was a trick in Chicago. I worked at a place where we used to make basil oil, just herbal oils for color.
That's right, so
to extract a lot of the chlorophyll.
Yeah.
So you just heat it up really, and then just let it come back down to temp naturally. And then you take that and blend it, like really blend it, and then strain it through coffee filters.
Huh.
And what you get at the bottom is this really intensified chlorophyll filled oil.
Huh. And it tastes like herbs.
It tastes like herbs. It tastes like whatever herb you just made it out of. And it's like when you see those like pictures of food and really perfect like globules of green and swimming in something.
Like parsley or whatever, like a garnish. It's to make it colorful
and
add some flavor.
Add flavor, yeah. It adds a lot of flavor and drama, you know?
Yeah.
And it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Really pretty.
Huh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Do you use cookbooks? Like, do you lean? Really?
Yeah, absolutely. 100%, like all the time.
So what do you do? What are you looking for are you looking for how that writer, that cook made a specific dish, just to learn about them?
Yeah, I think I love the reason why things are done a certain way.
Yeah.
Once I can figure out the reason, then I'm like, okay, cool. Like, So if I have six books and I see that the method worked six times, mm-hmm. then it's probably pretty good.
Yeah.
You know? Like the other day, for something as simple as like focaccia.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I know how to make focaccia, but it's like sometimes I'm like, well, maybe it's not the best one.
Try a different way.
Let's see what's going on. And then, you know, also, I just like cookbooks.
Yeah.
They're pretty.
They have pretty pictures. They do.
A lot of times I actually just look at the picture.
Yeah.
And I go, that kind of looks like this, that, and this. And I look at the recipe and it's not that at all. But I just come up with a dish based on like, oh, wow, that looks kind of cool. You know? The flavors are completely different than the recipe, but
yeah.
And that kind of was like what makes it my dish now.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I have a ton. I have a ton of cookbooks. I never cook from recipes. If I'm looking to solve a specific problem mm-hmm. or something like that, I'll baking. Look through it. Baking is different. Yeah, for sure.
You got a stopwatch.
What is the temperature in the kitchen right now? That definitely, that took me a minute to learn. When I made muffins and they were empty in the middle. Like, what? That's how amazing. The fuck did that happen?
Right.
A lot of ingredients went into this muffin that is like hollow. I was like, oh, so it does. So the temperature of the butter does matter. fill it in with chocolate pudding or something. Probably really a good idea.
No, I love cookbooks, and I have a lot. And then also, I mean, like a lot of the times, you just kind of look on your phone too.
Yeah.
I look on my phone a lot of times just to kind of verify a lot of things. And I mean, you know, I don't cook anymore.
Yeah, you're not cooking. Yeah.
You know, so I'm not like every single time knowing how to do it. And even when I was always kind of like I told you, I kind of had imposter syndrome for most of my career. Yeah. So I was kind of like, I don't think I know how to do it. So
I don't even think that is like a bad thing. You know what I mean? Like, when we think about like imposter syndrome or something like that, like, or that concept, it's really, I don't know. I think of it as like, we're just doing our own thing too. But I think like not knowing what to do is like a real gift a lot of times, right? Because we come up with like completely different way of solving problems that other people aren't doing.
Yeah, that's a great thing. I guess now that I've gotten older and I'm going on 20 years cooking, and you know, like I will say that as the years pass, I'm right mm-hmm. way more than I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, not to sound kind of conceited or anything, but no,
the number of years you've been alive helps you to like.
Yeah, but also kind of like, I'll be like, well, my version is better.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? Like, and my place is still open.
You know, I know.
You know what I mean? Like, sure. So
I know.
I mean, I know there's many variables that are doing doing that, but also just like, I had a guy actually one time who was a chef, and then he stopped being a chef. He wanted to concentrate on front of house. And so,
mm-hmm.
but he was a chef that I admired. Mm-hmm. He had gone very far, and he'd worked with a lot of the chefs that I wanted to work with. And they never hired me. They hired him. They didn't hire me.
Yeah.
We were working together on an offsite, and he'd been working at Bach and Hall for a little while. And I asked him, I said, you know, I was just, you know, I think I probably at this point had a couple of Buffalo Traces, and I was feeling a little looser. And I was like, hey, man, so, you know, you're a chef, so you're professional advice. Like, your professional opinion. Mm-hmm. What do you think of the food bar? And he goes, the food that you enrich, and that was my CDC at the time, you enrich in making a bar, you know, has fundamentally changed the way I think about food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was like, whoa! Like,
yeah, that's not what you were thinking.
No, I was thinking like, yeah, it's good. You know, like I changed that. No, but he was like, what he went out to say was like, look, I've dedicated my career and I have my process and do it the way I do it. And I've done it the way I've done it. Mm-hmm. And I've learned from some of the best and all this other stuff. At the end of the day, you're feeding 300 to 500 people a day.
Yeah.
And they're lining up.
Yeah.
And I can come up with the coolest technique and the coolest flavor combinations and the coolest drawings and books and books and books upon recipes, the original recipes.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm working in your front of house.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys are feeding 500 people
a day. Yeah. There's something about being able to keep people that happy and satisfied at that number.
Right. You know, and so, and I was like, and I never really thought about it that way before, you know? And it kind of goes to like the access of what is accessible.
Yeah.
And what are you doing? Mm-hmm. And what does that say about the kind of community that you want to have as a chef and restaurant owner?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to just do things for like 100 people mm-hmm. a month?
Mm-hmm.
You know, or do you want to be accessible to everyone, as many people as possible, and keep prices low and still high quality? You know what I mean? Like, it goes into a whole other.
Yeah. Or make people feel comfortable about. I think about that from our menu is just like, it's regular bagels and cream cheese plus some other things that maybe you wouldn't have mm-hmm. tried or thought about. But then you're like, oh, this is actually really good when you put it together. And but it's not scary. You know, you look at the menu in the same for Bacano. You look at a menu, you're like, oh, I know these things. I can imagine. And then you're like, oh, this is way better than I thought it was going to be. You know, or like reading a menu is always so, you never know. You know what I mean? Like what something, sometimes you don't know what something's going to taste like. And right. you kind of imagine something and then you get something else. And you're like, oh, fuck, this is real good.
Yeah, that's the best. Like when my favorite places like eat at or the places that like I think, I'm pretty savvy. You know, I read a menu and I'm like, I know what that's going to taste like. And it's like, oh man, it's even better than I thought it would
be. Yeah.
Like that is, well, I don't know.
Yeah.
Places that I remember.
We started talking about cookbooks, but I wanted to ask you, what are some of your favorite cookbooks?
It's a really great cookbook, but it's a horrible title. It's called Cook Italy.
Oh yeah.
Cook Italy. And it's, I don't remember the author. But it's, to me, such a really good book. It's a very complete book on Italian cooking. I love that book. I look at it a lot. There's a cookbook called Just Flaked on it. The name of it. I haven't looked at it. Boston.
Yeah. It's not
one of my favorite cookbooks.
No, what are some of the things that, or I guess resources that you look up online? Because now like you search a meal or something like that and it's like someone's mom, you know?
Yeah, that's true. You know, it's funny because the things that we look up are like the regional foods that we can't get here.
Oh.
So, you know, and it's funny because Anne was really kind of like nervous about me talking about this that anyone.
Okay.
She's like, don't say that we cook Persian food.
Oh.
Yeah, you know, like nothing appropriate. I was like, it's for us. Like,
us
and the kids.
Try like, new things.
Yeah. And also because we grew up with, like, she grew up in D.C. and I grew up in L.A.
Yeah.
And I grew up with Persian food and so did she.
Yeah.
And we can't get those flavors here.
No.
So, like, you got to make them.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you know.
That's true.
There's nobody selling kubide here.
And, yeah. You know, I mean, one of the cookbooks, I use a Lebanese cookbook all the time. It's my favorite. And I just will pull like one thing from a dish or so, like one sauce or like one thing.
There's a book called Cooking for Good Times.
Uh-huh.
I see all these books are like, have kind of like funny titles. Like really.
Cookbook.
Yes, cookbook. A Silver Spoon. I mean, do you have that one?
No, I don't have that one. I've heard of this though.
I referenced, it has like 3,000 recipes.
Yeah.
It's like the number one selling cookbook in Italy or something. Uh-huh. Like that, you know? And I reference that book a lot. There's an Ottolenghi book that I look at all the time.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of, like I tell you, a lot of the times I don't, when I go cook,
yeah,
I don't look in the cookbook necessarily,
yeah,
like at home in particular. I'll look at the pictures, and I'll be like, "Ooh, that kind of do that."
Yeah.
Oh, you know, it's another cookbook which I love, absolutely love, is the Jelena cookbook.
Oh, I don't know. Have
you been there?
No.
And if you ever go to L.A., Southern California,
yeah,
go to Jelena. It's spelled G-G-J.
Uh huh.
E-L-I-N-A, Jelena.
Okay. No.
It's in Venice. It's such a cool restaurant. I guess it just made 10 years.
Oh. Right?
Which I'm like, really?
Oh, wow, yeah. Or
8 years. Not a long time, but for LA, it's like a long time.
Yeah.
It's just super, super simple. One of the simplest, just good food restaurants I've been
to. That's cool. Yeah. I've been to LA a couple times, but I've never eaten out in LA. I've always been at friends' houses.
Yeah.
Like either traveling in and out. I spent a lot of time in Thailand, and so I would fly through LA and I would like spend a night or two with a friend. But yeah, I've never actually gone out to dinner. I know there's great food. Yeah.
It's so big. Big city.
Yeah. And it's Thai so diverse.
Town, like Thai town, which is, I mean, I don't know the exact number of Thai people that live in LA, but it's like over 100,000.
Oh, wow.
It's such a big city that it's like a minority.
Yeah.
It's like someone told me like 800,000 Salvadorans there.
Oh, wow. Holy crap. Some mini New Orleans.
it's twice the size of New Orleans.
Yeah.
Of just Salvadorans. And they're like nowhere near a large part of the population.
Yeah. That's cool. What are you think? Like when people are cooking at home and they want to make something like, I guess, what are a couple tips of making whatever you love to make at home really stand out or to really like
use more garlic? And if I had a secret for my success with my recipes, is I use at least twice the amount of garlic that the recipe calls for.
Nice. Yeah.
I mean, like, everything. I start with 4 cloves of garlic.
Really? For whatever?
Like, whatever.
As you're reading, whatever.
4 cloves of peel before I start doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think more garlic than you think should be in there. Garlic or onion?
Yeah.
Obviously. But also just like that acid, that little acid kick at the end. I think a lot of people, that's like a restaurant trick.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a little acid at the end. Most people are like, why does my food not taste like a restaurant? It's like, because you did not drizzle it with olive oil. You did not give it a little bit of lemon.
Like as you're about to eat?
Yeah. Like everything's done and it's
like
a little drizzle. At Bacchanal, actually, we called it love.
Yeah.
You give them a little love?
Yeah.
A little olive oil, you know what I mean? Either, whether it was seasoned like the chorizo olive oil,
or
just plain olive oil,
and a little lemon, like just like like cut a lemon in half and then not the whole half.
No. I mean like a little tiny drizzle. Like it doesn't have to be like it just kind of like lifts everything up a little bit. It's weird. It's just the weirdest thing.
Yeah.
I mean, not everything. Obviously, like don't do it on like a piece of cheesecake, or you know.
It's like, you know, oh God.
Yum.
Oh God, that sounds so disgusting.
Nice red wine vinegar on my cheesecake.
Oh, like, horrible. God.
Yeah, that's horrible. But yeah, if you're doing like especially on grilled meats or any kind of vegetables, like little lemon juice on top, forget it, it's great.
Yeah.
Whole herbs. Flat leaf parsley, love. I think everybody's getting more into the whole herb thing again, or more now. Mm-hmm. Just like pick fresh herbs, like basil and parsley, all the what they call it, fine herbs, the ones you can make. Not like rosemary or thyme, which are woody and you can't really chew through them.
Basil, the brighter ones, and it's also good for your hormones.
Really?
Yeah, so especially if you're going through perimenopause or menopause, like thyme, basil, those are really good herbs to include in your either as a, in your teas or just to add to whatever you're doing.
Yeah, basil and parsley. We grew parsley once, and I mean, our house is where a lot of things would die.
Okay.
Like, we're not really that. Well, no, we have a fig tree that is like award probably. And we have a couple of things that we're really good at, but we've been trying to grow parsley. We did it one time and it was very successful. I mean, we're talking like 4 foot high.
Really? Parsley. I love like, parsley so much.
Like I was taking it into like Bacchanal.
Yeah.
Like, don't worry about parsley for the week, guys. You know, like taking a machete, like, you know, it was crazy. It just kept growing and growing, and then it bolted, and then it became a butterfly garden, which I didn't know that monarch butterflies like parsley.
Really?
To put their cocoons on. Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Oh, interesting.
So we actually had four monarch butterflies like come, like, I guess,
transform. Oh, the little how?
Yeah, in our parsley.
Oh my God, I didn't know that. I love parsley so much. Mm-hmm. I just feel like it's like sunshine. Mm-hmm. It just like brings, I love it. It's so good.
There's this really cool salad for cheeses that I stole from a place in Chicago called Vivek, mm-hmm. which I've stolen from everything. The place that place is to me like the best place to be.
Yeah.
And they do a very simple, like, with their cheeses, like as an accoutrement salad, mm-hmm. it was red grapes, like sliced in half, mm-hmm. and then like Marcona almonds, and then whole flat leaf parsley, mm-hmm. and then olive oil and lemon juice and like cracked pepper. And they would just toss that salad and put that with a cheese plate.
Yeah.
And with a stinky triple cream or double cream cheese. Oh my God, it's so good.
Yeah. I love herb, like when I make a salad, just putting herbs like as part of, like, as if it was a green, like mm-hmm. a type of green.
Yeah.
So like mixing my arugula and I love iceberg like and romaine and then just like straight from, you know, I don't really cut the herbs either. I just throw them right in there.
It's funny because one of my other cookbooks that I've over the years looked at a lot is Jamie Oliver has a book. I forget what it was called. It was a long time ago. And he's got a salad in there.
Uh-huh.
And it's a tarragon salad.
Oh, uh-huh.
And it's nothing. There's no other green.
Uh-huh. But tarragon?
It's tarragon and like yellow grapes or green grapes or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And I don't even remember what the... It's a tarragon dressing.
I'll look it up.
I don't even know what the dressing. I think like a lemon vinaigrette or something.
Yeah,
really simple. But I did it at Bacchanal, and people loved it. I mean, they felt like they flipped for it. It was expensive. It was like,
yeah, tarragon. The herbs are so expensive.
And
I know.
All it was just tarragon.
Yeah,
you have to pick, you know, 4 gallons of tarragon every day.
It's a lot.
It's ridiculous, you know. But it's funny because like the tarragon is so pungent, like mm-hmm. a certain, like your palate just like flattens out,
yeah,
and then you start tasting like the other flavors that are in tarragon, other than tarragon.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So you start tasting like the grassy notes, and you start tasting the nutty notes.
Yeah,
of the tarragon. That's cool. Hmm. Really good sound.
Cool. I'll look that up. I'll put that in the show notes.
All right.
That sounds delicious.
It's so good. That salad. So good. Hmm. Okay.
Yes, nice. Good job.
I copied the right salad.
Yeah, I know, right? Exactly. Well, thank you so much. Yeah, I appreciate it. I appreciate talking to you. Yeah, I know. I need to get that bar. I need to pull your bar stool back up to the counter so
you
can sit in there.
I was so not productive. I was like, I'm going to go to church. I'll be productive there.
Sit there. No, we would just sit and talk.
I'd be like, I got to go to work. I was like,
I know. I miss that about being, well, I only work one shift a week now. Mm-hmm. Behind the counter, but I miss those days when we would just have someone would sit at the counter and we would just talk for like whatever.
Coffee and talking.
I know, just those are good. I know. And then, yeah, that was good. I miss it. I miss that. I love being in school, but I really miss being at the shop, you know, just talking. Like, I just want to be that old lady in the restaurant that she's had forever, sitting at one of the tables, like, talking shit all day.
Right. You know.
Drink some, like, you know, drink a port, which we don't serve.
Here's your sherry.
Yeah, sherry, which no one else could have.
Right.
You know.
It's all Fairbanks.
Fairbanks
sherry.
Jug. Pretty much. Yeah. Well, thank you again. Yeah, I really appreciate the time.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Well, that's all for today. Thanks so much for listening to Making Good. You can find our podcast on all the platforms you find your favorite podcasts. You can also find a transcript of this episode and all of our episodes on our website, churchalley.store. If you loved this episode, please share it and let others know about the good work of Church Alley Cafe and Grocery. Thanks again for listening to Making Good. I hope you have a really good day. We'll see you next time.